Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends, after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
That's what this is. Let's have some fun, fellas. Yeah. I got my good friend Tom Shelf over there. Whoa. The mighty Reverend Enfuego.
Hello.
And everybody's favorite, the Nature Boy, Mono Nick.
Yeah.
You would think that we're about to interview the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, but that is not the case.
What?
We are one step closer to the Nature Boy, though, because we are about to talk to his daughter, the current WWE Divas Champion, Charlotte Flair, is going to be joining the Mixcast. We also have Glenn and the fellows from Windowpane. They're going to be popping in just a little bit as well.
Wow.
We're going to be listening to a bunch of the new songs off of the new Windowpane record. But the jam of the week, it's Killer Mike. The song is called Ric Flair.
I'm going on tour, and I'm going to show anybody out there that thinks for 1 second that maybe I'm second-guessing myself. That I am the greatest of all time, forever and ever. One surprise! One surprise! Shh. I'm back.
Ooh. Me dead.
To make it off the ice cold streets of the city, you better have a Christopher Word game with it. You better have a dance game similar to Diddy, or play beat baller but a rim like Smitty.
I've learned something.
Chris, what's that?
There are a ton of rap songs about the Nature Boy Ric Flair.
And country songs.
There's one country song, which is great. Like, I hate it. I don't even remember who that is, but I love that song.
That was amazing.
But this is, I think, the best of them all. Like, this Killer Mike track, he's done a good job of merging his song with the samples of the Nature Boy.
What the f*** you do? Where the f*** you from?
Yeah, where you from, man?
Somebody get this
from Charlotte.
And I'm about to jet off on his ass like a Boeing. Going, 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 gone. So, you don't like the prestige that I have in life? You don't like the notoriety? You need just the fact that I got more cars than most of you have friends. I got a big house on the big side of town. I got life pretty much the way I want it. To make it out the ice cold streets of the city, your mind state gotta be as wicked as fitted. Can't love life, sucker, then no mama's.
Oh, you can't do that.
Bitch ain't with it. You gotta have faith, living life on Biggie. I'm ready to die for the money. Who is with me? Life after death, hey, this must be hell.
It's gotta be crazy to be the Nature Boy and have so many people paying tribute to the point where you probably don't even realize how many people have written songs about you.
He's transcending genres here.
Yeah. Well, he's like the ultimate.
He's the best bad guy that's ever been in wrestling.
Good,
like
him and Piper.
Yes.
Different reasons.
Absolutely different.
Piper was like the guy that's in a bar brawl, like that jerk that's just willing to do whatever, and Nature Boy was just this pompous jerk.
Yeah, he was the one who was flaunting everything, and then when you went to go to get him, he'd have all of his boys for the backup. The four horsemen were his men, and then Nature Boy, if you got your hands on him, you'd probably wreck him, and that happened a lot.
Yeah.
Did he wear purple trunks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a sequined robe that had a lot of feathers and fur on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just extravagance.
I don't know if Charlotte's ever going to get to the point in her career where she's got a bunch of rappers singing about it. She might not want a bunch of rappers actually singing about her. That could go down a very bad road.
Mm-hmm.
But Charlotte's kicking ass, dude, in the WWE. She was just a dominant force in NXT, which is like the training ground, and put on some great matches with a few other people that she liked to call the four horsewomen, her, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Becky Lynch, your girl, the steampunk girl.
Oh, yeah.
Who now, when she comes out in the WWE, she's got steam shooting up from the,
ramp. All right, I got to start watching those videos.
Yeah, and she's easy to look at.
Yeah. I've seen the pictures.
So actually, I think the phone is ringing.
Oh.
So before we,
The girls call me Slick Rick. And all the other women around the world just say, oh, there goes the man.
And all right, hi, KISW.
Hi, I'm for Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve.
Okay, I'm going to connect you in with Charlotte.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The conference is now being recorded.
Ooh.
You're connected with Steve. I will now turn you over to the Divas champion, Charlotte.
That's right, the champ.
Wow.
What's up, Charlotte?
Hey, guys.
How are you?
What's up, y'all?
Oh, things are great over here. I'm very happy to get to talk to you. Talk to the champ. The champ is here.
Wow.
How are things going with you now that, man, I have so many questions. I know we only have a little bit of time, but I just want to say congratulations on making women's wrestling something that's a point. It's like must watch now. I remember, you know, I've been watching wrestling my whole life. I'm a huge fan. And, you know, sometimes you get into a rut where you're like, oh, fast forward through this match. But ever since, like, ladies like yourself and Sasha Banks and Paige and, I mean, the Becky Lynch, I mean, you guys put on such awesome matches. And it's not even about, like, oh, these are ladies wrestling. It's just wrestling, man. I'm just really pumped. I think I'm excited about the future of the WWE and wrestling in general, that you guys just bring it every time you're on television, every time you do a pay-per-view. It's just awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I mean, that's all. The women's division, I think, has never been stronger as a unit, but we all are working towards the same goals. And I think that's really what helps. And the fact that the audience is even taking to that and wanting to see women's wrestling, it's awesome.
do you hope that eventually that you guys, I mean, I know you guys have the faction in real life of the four of you, and you call yourselves the Four Horsewomen. Do you ever hope that you guys can turn that actually into a storyline on the WWE? Because I think it would be epic if you, Sasha, Becky.
I hope so.
You got to get Bayley up in the WWE. You got to get her up from the NXT, man.
Yeah. Well, hopefully as soon as she drops the title. We all just got Four Horsemen t-shirts. I hope. I mean, it'd be weird for all four of us to be together, because as great as we are together, it's even better when we're all apart.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously getting to face each other, but I'm sure down the road, you'll see us all four as a faction, which I think would be awesome.
That would be pretty damn sweet. And for those that don't know, I think most people would realize that. And that's why I love the nod also, is that your pops is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. I would love to know the honest answer on this one. I mean, obviously, it's your pops, okay. and you watch wrestling.
I'm an open book.
Has there ever been a time that you were rooting for the other guy when they were wrestling your father, like maybe like Dusty or whoever it may be? Like you were kind of like, yeah, I want to see this guy beat my dad's ass.
Well, not so much for me, but my brother was the biggest American Dream fan.
Oh.
And he'd always tell my dad that he was the best and would quote all of the Hard Times promos, like of Wine and Dine, the Kings and Queens, the Late and Alley King, Pork and Beans. And if you ever, you know, really know my dad and Dream's background, they kind of always argued who was better on the mic.
Oh, that I get
and
that.
So
yeah.
For my dad to hear that, you know, Dusty had the best promos.
From his own family. Yeah.
A big pill to swallow. Yeah. I've been through hard times. So, yeah.
Hard times. I love that.
Hard times.
But hey, you got to talk about it's funny to see how like all these football players and rappers and whoever it may be are quoting your dad's promos and name checking him in rap songs. It's like, I think it's crazy as a wrestling fan that like, you know, I mean, I remember when wrestling was kind of like, you know, people looked at me like I was crazy for loving wrestling. Of course, those days are gone and it's become such a big, giant mainstream thing, but there was once a time where you looked at like you were a little weird if you were a wrestling fan. It's cool for me, being now a 40-year-old dude, seeing wrestlers getting name checked and being put in rap songs. I think that's awesome.
I know, especially like playing the rap song for my dad, because he's a total like Tina Turner. I mean,
like, I can't imagine
like the 50s Camel. So I'm like, Dad, you're in this rap song, and he'll like raise his eyebrows and be like, whoa. Or I'll get YouTube clips, and I'll be like, because my nickname is Winky, and he'll be like, hey, Wink, look at this football player that is doing the strut. So it's funny. He gets a kick
awesome.
Out of it.
Oh, that is so cool. Just so everyone knows, we're talking with Charlotte Winky Flair. SmackDown is now.
Okay. All right. Let's not get crazy.
I know. I'm just kidding. SmackDown's now on the USA Network, and that's Thursday nights at 8. That's pretty cool that you guys have switched on over there. Like I said, I know we have to hurry up this interview, but I wanted to ask you something, because being a big wrestling fan, and I know that you know you busted your ass to get to the point where you're now in the WWE, did some great stuff in NXT. Do you remember the first time when you were in the squared circle, whether it be NXT or the WWE? Because for me, somebody once made a sign with my name, and it ended up on Raw when the New Day were doing like their weird whip and nay-nay dance, and right behind him it says Steve Miggs is best for business, and I lost my mind. Do you remember the first time that you saw somebody have a sign with Charlotte, and how did that feel, and what did the sign say? I don't even know if you guys noticed it. Maybe
I do. It was actually at NXT though,
uh-huh.
Not on Raw or SmackDown. But someone had it was when I guess a little bit after I debuted, someone had a huge Nature Girl sign, and I had never thought to call myself the Nature Girl. I was like, oh, yeah, the Nature Girl. But it was on NXT television or the network, so I was like, oh. There's a sign and it says Nature Girl. So I thought that was pretty cool.
You're like, why didn't I think of that? This fan didn't I?
Why didn't I think of that? That's so great.
Charlotte, one last thing.
I
wanted to get from your mouth that I've heard the rumor that once you brought Macho Man Randy Savage to a show and tell as a kid. Is that true?
I did. I did.
That's amazing. You won that day at that point.
You won forever. No one will ever have a better show in town.
I know, but the thing is, my class was so used to like, I have a picture of me and my dad, and I had his world heavyweight belt with me, like the old school one, the big gold one.
Huge one,
and
yeah.
My class was so used to me bringing, like, random, like, my dad or wrestlers. It wasn't like, oh, they're probably just another guy.
Oh, wow. I would have lost my
mind.
Because
Million Dollar Man came and ate lunch with me, too, one day.
Did he bring Virgil with him?
No.
Did he pay?
Virgil would have charged.
So, no, I mean, it was, yeah.
Oh, man, well, I don't want to keep you. I know you got a bunch of interviews to do. I'm very, very happy as a wrestling fan. I've loved everything that you've been doing. And like, I'm one of those guys that's like, I wish you could go back in NXT because the matches are longer. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking this is baby steps to one day the WWE.
Baby steps.
And there'll come a day where you'll be able to have those long matches in the WWE, and it's going to be mind-blowing. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, and SmackDown, now on the USA Network, Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Thank you so much, Charlotte.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. So we got in studio, we got the boys in windowpane, we got Tony, we got Glenn.
Morning.
Hello there, guys. Nice to see you, as always.
Yeah,
this is an exciting time. Usually, the last time we had you in, we jammed out with my cell phone.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't have the app ready.
Your drum kit.
Yeah. The footage of that is epic.
Just get up on the microphone so that...
incredible.
Get up on that. Kiss that.
I was going for that cave effect.
Yes.
You know, we threw Glenn down in a well. He refuses to rub the lotion on his skin. Therefore, he will be getting the hose again.
So, you got the show on Saturday. So, today is Tuesday the 12th?
Yep.
So, the 16th. Saturday the 16th at the Showbox. I'm going to be there. I think almost the entire radio station. If anyone ever wanted to meet anybody from our radio station, they might want to go to a windowpane show.
Oh, yeah.
That is so cool, man.
Because I keep hearing everybody in the hallways.
Well, Ryan sent me the list, and it was just a list that ended with the word cool with a question.
I know.
I was like, yeah, it's cool, man. Of course.
It's like, here's our staff directory. Can you just put everybody on the list?
Well, that was part of the thing we talked about on the promoter side was, you know, if Showbox looks at that and goes, hey, look at the size of this list. We'd be like, it's Loud and Local Presents. Here's the amount of, you know, this is what they brought to the table promotion-wise. So,
right.
Yes, these people will be coming in, and you're going to food and drink them.
Right. And they're going to talk about the experience, and it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's all about just, you know, it's one hand washing the other, I guess.
Right.
But it's kind of cool when I think about it. I'm like, I don't know any other band, like local-based band. I mean, obviously besides like a Pearl Jam or Alice in Chains, but a band that's, you know, plugging away and doing their thing that the entire staff is like, yeah, I got to go. And that's got to be, it's got to feel, I don't know.
It feels great. But I think, you know, over the years, I've personally gotten hammered with the entire staff at one point or another.
Once or twice.
But no, it's a cool thing. I mean, a lot of it spawned from the New Originals, man. You know, Misha from Witchburn invited me to come jam with the New Originals, and that was the beginning of me getting to meet, like, a lot of you cats.
Right.
And we just developed friendships. And so, of course, it's amazing to know that all our friends from, you know, one of the biggest rock radio stations in the country are going to be at the show. But by the same token, it's just, man, all of our friends are going to be there.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a cool thing. It's a family affair, man.
It's a destination show, I think, for a lot of us because we know the grind that you guys put in to create is right here in my hand, which is the CD. I can't wait for the vinyl. I've been geeking out on
vinyl
stuff.
We're excited about that, too. It's an interesting thing. I mean, the resurgence in vinyl has been so massive that there's only, you know, 5, 6, 8 places left in the world that really do it and do it well.
Huh.
So we went to a place that was recommended. Our buddy Brett that had done a bunch of vinyl pressing with REM said, hey, this place is really good. And they've been fantastic to deal with, but it's a 7-month wait. The queue is that deep. So for all of our Kickstarter fans that are hearing this, we're all over your vinyl. Look for it in 7 to 8 months because we're behind Pearl Jam and whoever else is getting vinyl pressed.
Dude, it's funny you said because you and I, we bond over Faith No More. Hell, we went to the Faith No More show when it was at the Paramount together.
Which was killer.
Oh my goodness, it was amazing. But I pre-ordered the vinyl, and all of a sudden I'm like, hey, the album came out. I still don't have the vinyl.
What's your wait time? Did they tell you?
I can't remember when the album came out, but it was like 6-7 months after because I had a printing error, and they're like, we can send you this vinyl, but it's not to our liking, and there's an issue with the sound of it.
Yeah.
So we got to go through the process all over again, and Bill Gould, the bassist, sent out, he didn't person. That would have been cool if he emailed me personally, but...
Hey, Steve, it's Billy, listen.
Hey, Billy's here. Appreciate you liking the band. Can't get you to vinyl. But he spelt it out, and I appreciated, though, it was like full disclosure. Look, There was a mix-up. We don't want to give you a crap product. They got to go put it out. They got to redo it, and it's a process. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, is it that big of a process? But it sounds like it. And it was like a 6-7 month process to get that Faith No More album, even though I pre-ordered it.
Well, and they probably had a date that lined up with their release date, but since there's an error, they're back in the queue. And
exactly. And then they're waiting that long.
They're waiting that long.
You know that had to suck for them, because here's 18 years since they put out an album, and then they don't get to put out the vinyl.
Oh, what's one more year? Come on, man.
What, you waited this long, kids? You can wait a little bit longer. Here's the digital download. Yeah. But I was fortunate enough, because with myself and BJ also, a few other people here at the station, we all kicked in cash for the Kickstarter.
Yeah, thank you. We were sitting there signing packages the other night, the band.
That's a personal thing. We don't need to talk about that.
So BJ and Steve came by, and it was kind of a, can you clean up my coin purse? Sort of said, no, that's not what happened at all. But it's funny because, you know, Tony's wife, Sabelle's, reading off the names, and we're just kind of assembly line going through these. And then, you know, she'd say, you know, Carl, like, hey, to Carl, thanks so much. Saying to BJ, be like, BJ? Was that? Oh, sweet. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, so yeah, thank you guys for helping make it happen. Well, and even the promotional side of it, you guys had me on Listeners on the Loose and the podcast.
Yep.
The station did a lot, we feel, to help make the record happen, which, thank you guys so much. That's why we're coming up here and throwing around like candy, because it's like, you guys sort of made this happen. You really helped us on the Kickstarter front with the promotional side.
That's my favorite thing.
It's your record too, you know?
Damn straight it is. I'm looking forward to putting my album out on Saturday.
He's already charging me royalties. I'm like, we're giving them away. He's like, you know, you owe me negative 12 cents.
I see you handed out 6 CDs. What's going on? I need that kickback.
I've got some pocket lint on me.
I'm a donor. I'm an investor in window pain. I want my kickbacks.
We'll sign your package.
Yeah. All right.
We only pay in tears.
I'm turning the lights up.
But you got like $23,000 donated. Yeah. I don't even know what the proper term is with Kickstarter, but funded, I guess.
Pledged, I think.
Pledged,
yeah.
Thank
that's
you.
The term.
$23,000.
In less than 28 days.
Isn't that insane? Yeah.
And it wasn't one of those things where it ramped slowly. Like most of those Kickstarters you see, they sit low and then they jump way high at the end because everyone goes, oh, God, they're not going to make it. I don't want to sound that way, but we kind of cruised right into it, like to the point where we were going, oh, wow.
It's happening.
Oh, this is going to happen. This is, hey, we're going to be okay. And just,
because those don't know.
Really, really, it was such a, I just got goosebumps, man. It was such a cool feeling.
And for those that don't know about Kickstarter, if you don't hit the goal, you don't get anything.
You don't get the money.
Nobody gets charged.
Exactly.
So I had a buddy who was working on a documentary, and it's a powerful one. And, you know, I donated some money, and I was like, keeping tabs on it and never made the goal. And I'm like, oh, that's just a kick in the junk, you know, because it's like, but it's nice to know that you have all those people. And I think with music, that's what I love about Kickstarter, because I'm kind of anti the crowdfunding thing.
Depends on the situation.
Very true. And with music, at least, it's like, hey, if I'm donating $20 and I'm getting a CD, well, it's no different than me going to the show, pledging $20 or $15 or whatever it is. It's really no different. It's just investing ahead of time, and eventually I'll get what I paid for, which I think is pretty cool about Kickstarter. I think it really works well for bands that are trying to figure out their way, especially when, you know, as you get to the documentary with the record label fairy, there is no record label fairy. This is kind of a way to get around that. Okay, a label's not going to help us put this album out, but our fans will.
When you're sort of advanced purchasing the product. Mm-hmm. So, hey man, look, if you want this album and you're willing to buy a digital download for $10 right now, instead of waiting until after we put it out, where's the difference there? And that's what we found. And the other side of it that was really cool was 99% of the people that bought the digital download bought a hard copy as well.
Right.
So boom, bang. And then, you know, some of the higher tiers, we did cool stuff where, you know, we'll play a show anywhere you want. I don't care if it's in your living room. And then that had...
Have you heard from anyone? Do you know where one of those shows...
We still don't know when or where, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know. I don't care if it's a hot tub party. Like, woohoo!
You know, that'd be cool. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, my little brother's bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Which is also a hot tub party.
Yeah. It's weird. I'm not even Jewish, but I have a little brother who's having a Jewish event. It's whatever has to happen for window pane.
We'll play little Jimmy's Bris, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited. Guys
are so excited.
Rem's the only one that got the Bris reference.
Oh, I got it. We don't need that, man.
Rumpel foreskin.
We're just going to use a guitar string for this.
Listen,
come on, Tony.
Just do it for mama. Just come on.
I think there's a website for that, isn't there?
Probably.
So I get the digital download. I send you a text after I listen to it, probably for like 3 straight days.
Yeah.
And there's so much I want to say, and we'll get to some of the music as well. Like, originally I was like, ah, you know, we can have you come in acoustic, but I'd rather play the music off of this album that
That's
you busted
cool.
your ass
awesome.
On because,
yeah.
I mean, you guys put your heart and soul into this, and it shows. It's heavy. It's there's a sincerity. Your drummer, Sean, like I mentioned in the text, I've always loved, I mean, you've had so many great drummers that I remember that are good people and talented guys, but there's something, it's kind of like, not comparing you guys to Nirvana, obviously different sounds, but Chad Channing is an amazing drummer, mm-hmm. but there's something that Dave Grohl brought, and it's not even about the drum parts, it's about, it's that energy that he has, and Sean, your drummer, there's an energy to this album, even on the slower songs, when he kicks in, you feel that that boom. It's just...
Sean hits so hard.
Yeah,
Sean,
you can hear it on this record.
Than any other drummer I've ever played with. It's
it's a challenge to be in the room with him in rehearsal. He's always like, you want me to hit... I don't have to. And we're like, no, dude, do your thing. I'm just going to get further away from you.
And I might have to get a booster on my amp.
We felt that, too. We auditioned, you know, when Kevin made the decision to leave, we auditioned some really talented guys. And Sean, who was singing and playing guitar and fronting a band called No Ground at the time, we didn't even really know that he was a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, can I, you know, we're friends with him. We're like, well, okay, it's Sean. Let's have Sean
do
now.
Him a favor. We'll have some
can
beers.
We'll jam with our buddy, dude, you know.
It'll be fun. We'll do some covers.
He played. And we all went, oh, God. You know, and one of the first songs he played was Underfoot, which at the time was unreleased, but there was a fan EP we did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, let's do Underfoot. And we're like, oh, that one's kind of tricky, man. It changes speeds a lot, and it's really, like, even Kevin doesn't always nail it. He's like, I like it. Let's play it. And we're like, okay. And he nailed it.
Well, let's listen to it.
And
And we'll listen, and we'll talk a little bit about it.
This was the song that landed Sean his job, and he's been miserable ever since.
It's the first song off the new record, Underfoot. I think my neighbors hate me because of this song. Because when I first, I got a new Bose sound system for Christmas, and so once I got the digital download, I'm like, it's like Bluetooth. I'm like, let's go. I just jacked it full volume. Lulu dug it though.
Imagine that. Just killing. Did he fall off his treadmill? What the hell is that?
We're talking over it. Yeah, feel free talking to Mike.
Talking over the song.
It's kind of like I said. The way
this
I view
like director's commentary.
You know, I do the podcast when we listen to music. They always tell us we can't play full songs because of downloading issues. I'm sure you guys wouldn't sue us, but
I promise not to.
It's kind of now become. The music is almost like us in a room listening to tunes and talking about the tunes that we're listening to on the podcast.
Chime in. What I was going to say was, I mean, you're a drummer, so you get it in that you heard that intro. It's just crazy, the crazy kick drum floor tom thing.
Yeah.
But then it drops into a big halftime swing.
Right.
It has to feel like a pendulum. And even when we're playing that as a band, it's a real tough moment to lock up right on because it's supposed to suddenly go from that, you know, Harley Davidson at idle to a big old groove.
Right.
And that's what we didn't always... Kevin wrote that drum part, and we didn't always nail it because it's really challenging that first day in. Sean nailed that pocket, and we're all in verse one going, did that just happen?
Yeah, because...
That was the moment. Like,
he's our guy.
Yeah.
So, how many songs off of this record were written before Sean joined the band, do you think?
There were maybe some infant versions of them, but maybe two or three. You know, Underfoot, Welfare Line, but none of them were actually realized, you know? I mean, other than, like, Underfoot and everything else, I think, right?
Everything, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a demo version we were kicking around of Words and Nothing More.
Mm-hmm.
We had tinkered with it, man. Like, we might have had one or two versions of it in the raw in Pro Tools to see if it was even something that was going to go anywhere. But I would say most of this happened, you know, with Sean.
Because he had to have brought an energy to the band that... got your creative, both of you guys.
Completely.
Your creative juice is just flowing.
Yes. He brought a totally different side out of us.
See, kids, drummers are important. You know? That's all. That's the only reason why I have you guys on. I really don't care about your songs. I just wanted to prove that drummers are important.
You just got to think of it this way. The drummer is your spine.
Yeah.
So if your spine's weak, then you're basically just a head sitting on hips, which is disturbing as hell. You know, it's your drummer's your spine, man. Without that, if you don't have a good rhythm section, you ain't got nothing.
It's funny, my wife can tell when I don't dig a drummer because like I'm like kind of playing the drums on my, like if we're at a show, I'm playing them on my thighs. Like trying to like, come on, follow my hands, bitch. Like, that's not my wife.
I'm the kid's pulling me out of pocket. He's pulling me out of the pocket. I'm leaving. Let's go to the bar.
Yeah, she's like, you're not feeling this drummer, are you? I'm like, he's just hurting the songs. He's hurting the songs.
That is painful to hear, man.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. Yes.
Dude, we got to talk about the recording process because you get all this money, $23,000. Now, some people might think, hey, let's just put a couple thousand into the record and put the rest in our pocket.
It's gone. It's gone.
We're
finding more money to fulfill all the Kickstarter stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we're really hoping to make a lot of money on Saturday to make sure we can do it. We have more stuff lined up to make sure that everyone's going to get everything. But it was almost a blessing that vinyls are 7 months backed up because we were like, oh, my God, where are we going to find this extra $3,000 to make these vinyls?
Right.
You know, and all these numbers. You know, so we spent every dime and then some to make sure that it's, well, that was the point, right? We wanted 2-inch tape. We wanted London Bridge. We wanted that sound.
Right. I mean, for those that don't know, London Bridge, anything that came out of the 90s, I would say.
Oh, Pearl Jam 10, Chains, Facelift, Dirt, Mother Love Bone.
Candlebox.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, a ton.
Anything and everything. There's got to be a certain, I'm not like a earthy, spirity guy, but in a sense. But there's got to be an energy in that room.
It's a thing, dude.
Because there's a history.
That's the piano Chloe Dancer was done on. It's cool, dude.
Wait,
yeah.
So the piano that you guys use on
The More I Run is, yeah. Yeah.
No wonder why I love that song so much.
As far as we can tell, we researched that and dug around. And it's interesting because that record was done out of a studio in L.A., except the Chloe Dancer thing, I think, is in two parts.
Uh-huh.
And we think, we're pretty sure, because they did, what was it? What was their EP called?
Plum Said, that's the piano.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the Chloe piano.
Shine's the EP.
Shine is the EP.
Right. And that has the full version with Chloe Dancer, Crown of Thorns.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Yep. So that's yes. If we're all yes, but yes. The thing too on a techie gear side was we were looking at a couple different studios.
We're all gearheads, so feel free.
Yeah. Really, man, it was that Neve console. That's why we decided to go there. We looked at a couple different facilities. They were all killer.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there for that board. Just for those preamps, it kind of came down to that, you know. And
that's interesting because when you watch what is it, Sound City,
that's 73 Neve. They have a 73 Neve.
Oh, it's
at
the same
London
thing.
Bridge, same year, same board, same.
Because you saw Sound City, and really like the documentary really revolves around that soundboard.
Yeah.
That's like the star of the documentary.
Well, there's a real just kind of organic, punchy. It just sounds like you're in a room with someone.
That's interesting. Because I mean, when I listen to this record, I mean, it's hard to tell when like. Obviously, so many things are now done Pro Tools, and people do either really great jobs or some where you're like, ooh, those drums do sound very digitally recorded. Yeah. Your album does have a warmth to it. There is like a timeless.
It's 110% organic. I mean, even in the mixing phase, Brett's approach to mixing was he
and Brett's the guy,
Brett Eliason, our producer.
Who produces Pearl Jam and he's done.
Yeah, he does all of their live stuff and more. And he was the audio supervisor for Pearl Jam 20, but you know, he's done like the Armenian Freedom concert that's going to be coming out for System of a Down. He did that.
How did you meet him? I mean, because you've worked with him since I've known guys back when Mike was your drummer. I remember when
I got to meet his wife through the music community, and she had our EP at the time was called Index Sessions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was home from tour. He was working front of house for Pearl Jam and literally walked through the living room and went, "Who's that?" And he called me. And it's in the movie, I talk about it. When he called me, I thought for sure someone was pranking me. He's like, this is who I am. And he's like, what I'd like to do is get you guys in the studio on spec. I'll just come out of pocket for it, and then we can shop it around because I think the band's good enough that we can get some things going on. And he was really excited. He's like, no, I'm leaving for tour. I'm going to be gone for about 2 months with Pearl Jam, and I'll call you when I get back. And I'm like, sure you will.
Right. Wait, can't Pearl Jam wait?
Yeah. I kept waiting for someone to be like, sorry, Glenn, we had to. I know it was cruel. You can go cry now. But no, it was legit, and he was home like 2 days and called me back, and that was the beginning of that relationship. And then, of course, that turned into a friendship. He's a wonderful guy. His wife's a wonderful lady.
He seems like an awesome dude on the documentary.
They're great people, and he really cares about. Brett found a great niche in the industry where he does all of the 5-1 and live stuff. That's really he found his niche, and a lot of that had to do with
he had a hard time dealing with musicians, and I guess I would go ahead and say just say egos.
Mm-hmm.
So you get into a situation where you're trying to work with someone and create something great, and if they're bucking you the whole time, he threw his hands up. He's like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to do that. So he found a killer niche where he doesn't have to deal with some guy. You know, he can just sit down and, hey, here's your mix, and they go, oh wow, this came out great, thank you, and boom.
Because they have faith in him. Yeah.
Yeah. So
how great did that feel for you? I mean, you're a guy that's been doing music for all your life. Like myself, and in anything, even with radio, like anything that involves art and creativity, how great was it for you to, I mean, I would imagine that's got to be the ultimate self-esteem booster to make you realize what you're doing is worth all the time, worth all the energy. When you have a guy like him who's, you know, he's been around the block a couple times, he's seen a couple pretty amazing bands go up the ranks, and to have him seek you out and say, hey, what you are doing, what your music is worth my time, that's got to feel good.
It does. And
it's got to help, like,
even
I don't know.
The creatively, I mean, you got to understand when we say produced, I mean, we put together the songs, we sent him the songs to listen to, and he would make his notes, and he'd come down to rehearsal, and it was literally, okay, guys, look, that bridge is awesome, but let's hear the song without it. Let's pull that bridge out. Let's cut verse two, maybe lagging. Let's go ahead and cut verse two in half. And
is that like, hey, I love having you and your girl over, but hey, come over for the party and don't bring her this
literally,
time.
Literally, he's kind of like the fifth member of the band. And it's one of those things where you get so deep into it that you don't really have a clear view maybe of what you can't see the forest for the trees. And so he functions with us on that level. And literally down to little things like, okay, hey, Mark, when Sean does that turnaround, you two aren't quite locking. And Mark would be like, man, I've been playing this song for 3 months and didn't realize I wasn't locking up with him right there. So it's that kind of stuff because he's outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those ideas stick. Some of them are like, oh, so that was a bad idea. But literally it gets right into the arrangement of what's best for the material. And the point of that whole little ramble is trust. We trust this guy. And we work with him as a unit. He is kind of the fifth member of the band, especially when it comes to arrangement and songwriting. And that relationship's invaluable. You know what I mean? It's really... because he's good at what he does. And we listen to our songs and go, man, we'll listen to an early demo of it versus Brett's, you know, version. Just little changes. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, let's cut that bridge in half and let's move that guitar solo to here. What? Eh, try it there. Just see if it works. And then you hear what we had come up with versus what he came up with. It's like, man, I just didn't see that. And he really did. And that's exciting. That's cool. That's what it's supposed to be about, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to have that kind of relationship and not just someone who's just going to turn on all the switches and take your money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
those guys are out there, too.
Oh, there's a lot of them out there. Yeah. Peter Parker might have tried to make a second record with one of those guys, and it kind of never got released because of that reason.
Yeah.
This made me think that guy. I remember one time we go in there, and he's like, guys, I'm just really hurting, but we'll get this session done. And I'm like, well, what happened? He goes, I did a bunch of acid last night. And I'm like, thanks, man.
This is my life, and I'm poor, but thank you for your time.
Right. We've just busted. Yeah. And on top of that, so he tells us that. We're like, all right, we'll soldier on, man. We've heard some of his stuff. It's pretty cool. We finish it all. The next time we go in there to mix, he goes, God, I'm really sorry. I'm like, well, what? He goes, I'm going to need you to record your cymbals again. I'm like, my cymbals? He's like,
oh, dude.
I don't know what happened, man. You know, there's a ghost in here, and I think
the ghost
recorded over the overheads. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, you're effing with me, right? Like a joke. Like, you're just pranking me. He's like, no. He plays it. And I'm like, so you want me to bring back all my drums?
So is it like a digga digga?
It's like
a digga digga digga.
Oh, there's a cymbal. Kind of hear it. I'm like, you dick. Yeah. Like,
what do you mean is you were hungover and forgot to turn on the overheads?
Right, yeah. Right. But it's funny, I think about acid, and I didn't realize that the name windowpane, isn't that like a type of acid?
Yes.
Nice.
It's all the longest time I never knew what that meant. I was watching some kind of a documentary, and it brings up windowpane.
It's
in
ours. We explain it in ours.
Yeah.
I apologize to my parents.
Oh, dude, I was in a band for 4 months before I knew that.
Yeah, I've known these guys for years.
That's amazing.
When we were a three-piece, you'd always run into an older cat because it was a really potent acid called four-way windowpane, and we dropped the four-way, and it was this sort of the late 70s, 80s. By the time I was eating as much acid as I did, we should have called the band like Blotter, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you'd always run into an older cat and he'd be like, hey, when we were a three-piece, where's the fourth hit? And we'd be like, ah, that guy knows. In fact, I should chat with him.
He might know where it is.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the song The More I Run. The piano used on that was the piano used for Chloe Dancer, Crown of Thorns.
As far as we know, as far as we can verify,
you know what, we're going with it. We're gonna stand by it.
Well, I shot a disclaimer because it'll be that one person be like, "You guys lie, and I'm coming to your house to burn it down." And it's like, man, I just wanted to make a record. I'm not trying to make anyone mad.
Yeah. Right, we're not trying to like bank off of this, but yeah. I think that's really interesting.
We do too. We were excited about it.
When I texted you guys. Is Scott Plum the same guy that uncovered the
John Plum, yeah.
There's a Scott Plum. We talked with the girls.
Tony's texting him now, just so we can actually go on record.
I'm going to verify this right now.
I'm trying to be very careful about that, you know.
I texted you saying that's one of my favorites off of the record. And I'm typically a guy that likes the heavy, you know, just balls to the wall songs. But I listened to that song, and I was just like, man, this song, some way or some shape, if it gets in the hands of the right people, I could see that in a movie. I could see that.
I feel pretty good about that one.
I could hear that on the radio. I mean, there's a lot of songs I can
feel
you, that with.
Thank you.
But let's play that song.
Yes.
Because I love it. And now knowing that there's... We'll find out
potentially.
Soon. Yeah, we're gonna hold.
There's
on.
A lawsuit involved with this song.
Until it's confirmed, we're not playing. No, I'm kidding. Let's listen to "The More I Run." This is "Window Pane." Man, great song.
And how do you spell Chloe?
C-H-L-O-E.
Maybe I should go.
Thank you.
Maybe
it's a group effort.
We should ask Toppy. He knows how to spell Chloe.
You heard that song, Clon Dancer?
Chlorine Dancer? That's a good song.
Maybe I should see. Maybe I should hang on just one more time.
You know what's funny when I heard this? All I thought is, because we've always joked about doing like a little side project-y thing.
Yeah, we still need to. We have to.
And all I can think is, we got to do some kind of a Mother Love Bone song. Like, I feel, I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I feel like that there's a Mother Love Bone vibe to it.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do Stardog. I've always wanted to cover Stardog or Bone China. I've always wanted to cover. A lot of people do Stargazers.
Yeah. Gentle Groove was our wedding song. That's what we danced to.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
There's a couple on there that I'd love to.
Their music means a lot.
Yeah, dude. There's a couple of those songs I'd love to rip out at some point. Oh,
here comes the cool part.
Yeah! Balls!
Thank you, Sean.
Verified from John Palm.
Oh, got
that
the blue
is the
check.
Piano.
The blue check
the
is verified.
The blue check is verified. Nice.
Same piano.
Wow.
Verified from the owner of London Bridge, John Palm.
Dude, that is...
John, we love you, buddy. Thank you for that.
That's cool.
That is cool.
I mean, seriously, that's really freaking cool.
Myth confirmed.
So, I'll get into story mode. We had talked about this song.
And this is a song you performed acoustic on the last time you guys were on.
We did Lady Jessica and this. Yeah. No, yeah, we did this song. Yeah. But we'd always played it the way I played on guitar. That's how the band developed it. And we'd always talked about, look, when we get into the studio, maybe a Fender Rhodes or a Baby Grand, and we should tinker with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up at London Bridge, and there sits the infamous piano. And it was, we were getting ready to take a break and go out and get some grub. And I sat down and started to kind of peck it out on the piano. And Sean Morrison, our drummer, he comes in. Turns out he can play piano better than me, too. There's nothing that guy can't do, man. But
frickin' drummer.
He came in and started, he started helping me build it. So Sean and I kind of flesh it out. And the next thing you know, Tony's walked in, and Mark's walked in, and Brett's walked in, and everyone's kind of like, oh, man, you know, and then Brett's like, hey, look, let's do verse one. We're going to dump a bridge turnaround right in the middle there. We'll have Tony fly in a bit of a guitar thing. Tony runs out of the room to grab a guitar to start developing it. And he's like, and you're going to put verse two right there, and you're going to write a verse three. And I'm like, all right, man. And we just start putting it together. But we all, it was one of those things, like you see in the movies, it never really happens because poor people don't have the kind of time to write music in the studio. But the whole band was gathered around this piano, and then Tony comes in with his gorgeous 335, plays that little lead that happens in the turnaround. Everyone's got hair stand up on the back of their necks, and so there it is. And I think I could have played it, but turns out one of the engineers there, a guy named Dave West. So we go to this Mexican restaurant where there's this gorgeous hostess. Oh, man. Okay. It was terrifying, man. I mean, I didn't write down her license plate number or anything.
She had some sweet tamales?
Twice. Oh, she was so hot. It was weird, man. Just like, what's she doing here? You know, like, she was that hot. So anyway, that made us all imbibe a lot of tequila. And so we got back to the studio pretty well lubricated, and Dave West was sitting there playing the piano, and he's a hell of a pianist. So we're like, Dave, look, would you, I'll show you the part, and then you play it the way a proper pianist could, and would you want to do this on the record? And he's like, well, yeah, man, you know, so we kicked him some ducats, and he's the guy that did the actual performance and played it beautifully.
Yeah.
That's the story of how all that came together. Oh, Jonathan just said, awesome, thank you. What was that for?
No, we said, this is also the same piano that
is on Pearl
Black,
Jam.
Pearl Jam. Black.
Hey! Wow. Not nearly as awesome as Chloe Dance, but still pretty awesome.
Well, that's cool, man. We should tell people about that.
That's some cool history.
Six
right there.
Months after we made our record, we found out for sure that.
All right, awesome. Another addition to the documentary.
Yeah.
Dude, that is pretty damn cool. That's
I didn't know that.
That's some great history right there.
That's really cool.
And the song itself is maybe that had something to do with just the magic of the song. Because like I said, I'm not usually the ballady guy as far as being my favorite off of a record. I always like those songs, but that's that song and the other song that's a favorite is Welfare Line.
Oh yeah, thanks.
Just because let's listen to that one too. Yeah. We're probably gonna listen to the whole record.
I mean, love it. Cool. Yeah.
It's gonna for this one because it takes a turn in it that I wasn't expecting musically. And I think people will realize it when they listen to it as well. Okay, yeah, because it's just
the bunches.
The bunches?
All right, well, let's listen to it. I'll point it out. Again, this is Windowpane, the new record, self-titled, and it comes out on Saturday, right?
Saturday, Showbox Market, shows all ages. Come down, hang out with us.
I'll be doing the stage introduction.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, what should I wear?
A burka.
I love this part here, too. It's so cool. Right here.
Yeah.
Just not, I wasn't expecting.
Sean made this part cool. Sean really made this part cool. When he came in with that Tom thing over that pre-chorus, we were like, dude, that's when it really came to life, you know?
What makes this part pop even more?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, we'll take a little bit of a breather. We kind of tone it down for a second, then boom, balls in your face. No?
Balls in your face or balls?
Yeah, it was definitely balls.
Totally balls.
Totally.
Oh, got balls.
There you go, ladies. Yes,
it's got like, I don't know, like eight balls on this record, right?
Before and after. That, so tired, but I gotta keep writing.
That could be the treatment for this music video. Call and get through one more day. What demon can I kill so God might hear me pray? Gunn, your voice sounds so incredible on this record.
Thanks, man. Thanks. It's interesting, too, knowing that it all had to be grabbed on tape, I really psyched myself out about that. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when it came time for me to start singing, my voice was 70% hash. So I ended up doing what I could. We had to piece it all together. What was really missing was my high register. So I would sing this verse and that verse and this pre-chorus and one past this chorus and damn, stop.
Wow.
And the next day, I'd bang out three tunes, like full voice, just belting. Hey, I had a good day. And so it was really, I think, well, I caught a bit of a bug, and it was also psychological.
Stress.
It was like really, yeah, I was very, very stressed about, okay, we have X amount of time. If I get
it was still 14 tracks in 14 days. We had time, and that was part of the thing, but to be in a studio that way, really, 14 tracks, 14 days, it is not a lot of time.
No, because there's a lot of time being put into setup, getting the right tones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Exactly, yeah.
It's not like you just walk in, turn on a microphone, and then, boom, album's done.
In the end, I mean, it all came together really well, you know. But I was wigged out, man. And I think that was part of... Especially, it was... One of the first ones I went after was that AC/DC song. And I was just completely wigged out.
Which you guys played on Live Day, which was awesome.
Oh, yeah, man. But I started singing that song and just was crawling out of my own skin. And it sort of came out in the tracks. And I remember, I think we had done three passes, and Brett was like, let me get one more, see what comes out of you. And around that time, I had lost, all hope. And I got done with that pass, and he was like, dude, where'd that come from? I'm like, huh? Really? He's like, go again. And so it was those last two where I literally was like, I'm never going to be able to get this right, where I just sang, I don't know, but it was one of those moments, like, they were like, we need to come hear what you just did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's like that. It's just really raw, and I mean, you can hear that I'm a complete raw nerve, and I'm stressed out and sick and angry.
And I can hear broke. The anger. I can hear the, I don't hear the sickness. But it right, lends well to the performance, that stress.
It does, it does. It does.
You know,
well, that's where most of these songs came from.
I mean,
frustrated, angry. It's like, dude, really?
Yeah.
You know, it's like this tune. We had just gotten off the Five Finger Death Punch tour, and lots of people on their bench loved us, and they really wanted us with their company. Problem was, their company really couldn't afford to take on a new band at that time.
Right.
So it's like, dude, after that, after all that, I mean, it's just, you know, sat down and actually listened to a lot of Muddy Waters at the time, and the song I'm Ready. If you listen to that, which, of course, you know, no one would make that, you know, put that together, but that riff was inspired by the riff on that song.
Oh, that's cool.
Down and down.
Yeah.
You know, kind of similar thing. And yeah, but then it's like, sit down, start doing it, just anger. Just anger. Well, you know, when I pass it to Glenn, and Glenn, and the melodies and everything, Glenn can make, he's like, dude, do you like these? And I'm like, dude, yes.
I mean, well, we had been talking with a guy over there at Prospect Park that was really an avid fan of the band, and they love the band, but that was the thing. They said, right now for the label, too great of a financial risk, but you need to keep in touch with us. You need to send us anything you're doing. And we were like, okay. And I was like, well, dude, you know, no problem. Thanks so much. I'm glad that you guys are loving the band. Can't wait to get you the new stuff. And I'm like, you got any advice for me? And he said, man, I don't know what to tell you, brother. Do something bold. And that became kind of a joke, you know, for us. Like, ah, well, do something bold. And one of the first things that Tony brought back to us after all that was the body of what became Welfare Line. Hmm. And you listen to some of those turnarounds and some of those breaks.
They throw you for a loop.
You could tell he was angry, but he was also like, okay, how far can I push the envelope of a radio rock, you know, radio-friendly rock song without going, you know, clear to the realm of System of a Down, who's also a band that we both love.
Right.
So he brought that music for Welfare Line. I'm like, gah! And he had this great Steven Tyler kind of ragtime chorus. Tony, he was like, man, I just got this thing. He said, I want what everyone wants. It was kind of this Tyler-esque jazzy dance thing. He's like, I don't know where to go from there. So he fed me all that. And then, yeah, I came back with, well, here's the lyrics I came up with. What do you think? And yeah, just.
Well, that's cool.
But it was all inspired by anger. And then I just remember one of the last things we had heard was, hey, man, do something bold. And the first thing Tony brought back around was Welfare Line. I was like, well done. You know, like, that'll work. You
yeah,
know?
Send that yeah. to I would imagine you've already sent that guy.
Not yet. We're going to. I'm well, anxious to reach out to him. Yeah.
You got
to
let him know that that song is what inspired.
You're responsible.
That's a good point. Yeah, because I mean, you know totally. What?
You and Muddy Waters, man.
If he knows that, regardless of what happens, at least you know he's going to focus on that song.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
The problem is, in this record, in the current record industry, that guy's probably been replaced 6 times by now.
Yeah. True, true.
If you're out there, brother, I hope you still have a job.
Yeah. For you guys, I mean, I've been hearing these stories, and the documentary tackles it as well. There's a lot of almost, you know, in a sense of like, this close to getting signed, this close
dude,
to this.
Yeah, that Mel Gibson movie, yeah, we are almost.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many, can you think of how many, and is there any fun, like, memories?
It's
from
all been really cool, but it's you know, a tremendous amount of opportunities come our way, and I think had it not been for the shifts that occurred in sort of parallel in the industry, we talked about this on Sunday night, whereas right around the time the advent of the digital download really crushed the business model of the traditional record industry, the conglomeration of media was happening as well. Mm-hmm. So radio stations lost their ability to just, you know, deviate from a corporate playlist and things of that nature. So all this kind of, hey, it was like the perfect storm all happened at once, and it eliminated a lot of opportunity. That caused financial resources within the record industry to dry up, and therefore the days of, hey man, let's sign 10 bands, throw them out there and see which one sticks, are gone. Mm-hmm. You have to have something that's truly proven financially for them to even, aerial quotes, take a chance on you, right? So it's a much more challenging time. So as these opportunities came our way, they came our way at a time when it was like, man, we love the band, we love the music. How many records they sold? Yeah, a couple thousand. Oh, we can't do that. Hmm. Okay, we love the band, we love the, you know, and it was always one thing after another where, you know, we didn't have enough ammunition in our gun to say, look, this is sort of a no-brainer. And anymore, unless you get really lucky. I mean, basically, it's all luck, and it's the right place at the right time, and it's a lightning strike, right? But you can create your own lightning strikes. There are some artists out there today that certainly got lucky and got the right opportunity at the right time, or knew the right person and had the right channel or avenue. That is not to say that guys in our position that maybe don't have that can't work our butts off to create that lightning strike. Even the relationship that we've developed with you guys as friends and as a group of people that truly support us.
Right.
We're putting our big chunk of rebar in the beach. Like, hey man, it's Central Florida, lightning's going to hit this thing. So all those opportunities that came our way were great learning experiences. And I think the reason that the doors didn't open further than they did was just that the industry had changed so much. It was like, God, we love these guys. But the bean counter at the top heard it and went, man, they're killer. Just a little bit too great of a risk. Tell them to keep in touch because they really are onto something. And it's like, oh man, if we had been able to say, hey, we've sold 25,000 records instead of 10,000 records completely independently, that would have been the day. Dude, it's 25,000 units and they got radio play in four major markets. Yeah, let's get behind this. But you have to, the joke within our camp became, you almost have to make it on your own to make it. It's not like back in the day where, hey, this is great, let's get them picked up, let's get them on the road, let's get a single on the radio, and all that's coming out of somebody's pocket, bro.
Well, like you even said,
there's no pocket anymore.
Back, if this was 20 years ago, you guys would be on a label and it would be no...
Oh, dude.
It wouldn't even, nothing to sneeze at. But these days, like you said, the world of streaming, the world of digital downloads, I mean, it's a whole new
animal. The landscape has changed dramatically, and it's interesting that a lot of musicians truly don't realize just how dramatically the landscape has changed, and they find themselves wondering why their music community is suffering, their music scene's suffering, why these great bands that are phenomenal, that put on really well-attended shows and put out fantastic records aren't getting even management or agents behind them. Tony brings up frequently, like, you look at the big festivals, and it's always the same bands every year. Well, these were bands that were developed back when you could pour millions of dollars into developing an artist.
I mean, hell, you mentioned...
That doesn't happen anymore, man.
You mentioned REM. Think about that band's story. It took what, 6 records before Losing My Religion became made them a household name.
Well, but I mean, I loved them back during Document and the Green Album. Even in the 80s when there was money available, man, like Guns N' Roses was signed. Pearl Jam was signed as well. I think it was 2 to 2.5 years of them out on the road working, radio, and then, of course, the MTV market before the album, quote, broke, right?
Most of these bands that if they...
But they had support.
They had support.
They wouldn't have that support now if they weren't...
Oh, my goodness, no.
Pearl Jam would not have been...
You're going to tell me Primus gets a record deal in 2016? And I love Primus. They're an incredible artist, but someone's going to go, that doesn't sound enough like Nickelback. Well, we're going to lose our butts on this. And that's the sad reality. You're telling me Led Zeppelin gets a record deal in 2016? Oh, I don't know for sure.
No, it's a whole different world.
Because these guys are like, look, if we don't make these, it's become so corporate. And then there's a thing that goes on as well where even within a label, it's like, okay, well, rock had a bad quarter, but R&B had a great quarter. So let's put Carl over in R&B, over in rock, and see what he can do there. Well, that works great at a telecom, but when you're talking about music, that doesn't work, man.
Right.
The guy from R&B doesn't understand the marketplace, doesn't understand the audience, doesn't know what's going to stick. It's not his taste. It's not his thing. But they look at it from a business perspective of, he had a great quarter, so let's put him over here so he can turn rock around
for us.
With
a business mentality.
That doesn't work. And so it's, we find ourselves at a crossroads, what I mean? And that's why a band like ours has hovered at this, right at the edge of getting a great opportunity for so long, just because there's not as many opportunities out there, and even the people within the industry that love us can't afford to take a chance until we can really demonstrate that this is something that'll work. And what's cool is right now there's such a tremendous energy and excitement and buzz about what we've got going on with the film, with the new album, with
the Kickstarter too, I would imagine. Weird way, I'm sure that helped, like that endears these.
It's an eye-opener,
I mean, if I'm a label, if I'm anybody, a management company, it's like, these guys got enough money, $23,000.
In less than a month.
Right, to record.
We're trying to literally build it as such to where it becomes a package. Like, here's the material. I hope you like the material. Here's a film. Here's all these things we bring to the table where it sort of becomes, I hate to use the term undeniable, but look, if you give us just an inch, we can give you back a mile. The only thing we're asking, we don't really even need the financial support. Put us out on the road, we can prove that if you put us in front of audiences, we have the documented metrics to prove that we will generate revenue. Just put us in front of an audience and it works. Mm-hmm. We can actually show that now. So the hope is, the record came out great. We're excited about it. We've got the film, which is getting hundreds of views a day, and we haven't even really re-announced that it's out there. I mean,
I did once.
You did once, okay.
It's Tony's fault that's getting 100 views.
you know.
Take all that.
There's
statement.
A lot of momentum.
I can't accept that now.
A lot of momentum and excitement right now. There's a lot of energy, more than I've ever felt.
I'm pumped for you guys.
This.
I'm just, yeah, you know, I'm bystander.
It's but, feeling, I mean, well, now you guys are involved, man. Yeah. You know.
Well, it's funny because like, I talked to some people that have either in bands or guys that have recorded bands, and they're always like, hey, how can I get this band on the radio? I'm like, man, it's just not that easy.
It's not the way.
And
it
I use
to
a
be,
lot
man.
Of times, I'll use like you guys as an example. I'm like, these guys are a perfect example of it. They bust their ass. They put out a great product. I can't play their music like on, you know, just in the morning as much as I would love to, but I sure as hell can talk about them and share my experience and share my connection. That's, I think, is one of the few things. As long as we have an opportunity to use our voices, we can still spread the word, yeah. And then hopefully someone will be like, man, Steve doesn't shut up about this windowpane band. Maybe I should go check out their stuff. Then it's a success story, because I think it's like, sometimes I think that could even be more powerful than even a song being played, because it's like, you know, there's an endorsement from somebody who maybe somebody respects their opinion. Maybe
certainly
not me.
Really appreciate that, man.
But you know what I mean? Like,
I love that he throws in, maybe not me.
But. Yeah, but you know, maybe not. I mean, if they based on my movie reviews, maybe they won't. But you know, I think that's something that I try and tell bands that are trying to, and bands that listen to this podcast. I'm like, look, this is the best way you can do it right now. You got to kind of work the system and deliver a great product and bust your ass, and you hope that somebody is going to notice it and be your advocate. And I think you guys, fortunately, because of what you guys do, and you deliver something like, I have no problem saying, hey, I need a good show to go check out. I'm like, go see Windowpane. I know if I send someone to go see you guys, they're not going to email me back and be like, man, those guys just stared at their shoes and kind of just mailed it in. You know what I mean?
Well, it's part of the whole documentary being called There's No Such Thing as a Record Label Fairy. That was sort of a joke that we developed among a group of friends where, you know, you've got so many tremendous musicians, right? And they get together, they write an album, they record that album, and then what do they do with it? And so the sort of joke was, yeah, you put it under your pillow and you wait for the record label fairy, and the record label fairy comes and you get a tour bus and a $2 million deal. But that's what we've seen, and it's remarkable within our own communities, is how many musicians truly understand how much work you need to put into this. So we'll get a great band that hits us up and is like, man, we would do anything to play with Windowpane. And we're like, sure, man. We only do about 4 or 5 shows a year in this market. That's right. Intentional to guarantee but we self-promote too. We've gotten to a point where we needed to be getting more out of these events. We've been ripped off too many times. We self-promote. So if you're going to come to this event, here's what we ask. You know, can you guys move maybe 100 to 150 pre-sale tickets? They go, what? You want us to go sell tickets? Well, we sell tickets.
Right.
I drive around as the singer of Windowpane and deliver tickets. Yes, man.
Yeah.
You have to create the risk, because we're on the hole. They unlock the doors and we're in the hole. $8,000, bro. Just because they unchain the doors. We're not even talking about fees and taxes. You have no idea what's going on here. So what we ask is that you get out there and hustle and promote your... Don't you want to get out there and hustle and promote your band?
No, they want to ride your coattails.
Dude, they're shocked that we ask them, and I hate to be that way, but they're shocked that we ask them to work. And I remember for... about a year, I was a booker at a club in town, and I couldn't even get bands to send me posters. And these are the same bands that were like, yeah, man, like, and I'll be like, well, I got a Thursday night. Oh, man, like, Carl works in the morning, man. We can't play a Thursday, bro. I thought we'd get a Saturday. And I remember when I moved to this city and I had to fight and kick and scream to get a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't bring 40, 50 people on a Wednesday, you could forget a Thursday. And if you couldn't consistently bring 40, 50, 60 people out on a Thursday, you'll never ever gonna see a Friday. Fast forward, nowadays your first show is on a Saturday night, and people wonder why no one's coming out. These bands, and I think social media had a lot to do with it. Back in the day, you didn't have social media. I put up a post about the show. I don't know why no one came. You had to go out and hustle and beg people to come.
Stapling a poster on a pole is really not going to do all that much.
And I would say to anyone listening that's going, man, it's not fair. Windowpane's up there with Steve right now doing a podcast. You know how we got here? We hustled. We worked our butt. Watch the movie.
Yeah.
We work. And this is a full-time job, and you won't make a cent at it. But if you love it, pour yourself into it and work, man. Work. You want people to come to your show? Work for it. Work for it. You want to get to know bands? Go out to their shows. Pay $5 to get in and meet them. You can't become a successful musician from your iPhone.
Man, just, dude, I feel like every band that's starting.
Sorry
right
for
now,
the rant.
No, I'm dude.
Oh, I did not expect
that, and I wish that you would. I wish more bands would hear that. And like Rev said, it is enlightening.
I love local music. I support local music. I've got the Upwell disc in my car right now. If you haven't heard that record, it's incredible. I mean, I'm a big fan and advocate of the Seattle music scene, and there is so much talent. And there are talented bands out there that know how to hustle. There are, but there are a lot more that just don't.
Well, you got a few bands on the bill on Saturday that that are absolute hustlers.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we met Van Epps, man.
Great guys. We've had them on our podcast before.
Awesome.
Amanda Hardy, she's been a part of this radio station
before.
We've
been wanting to do a show with her
and
for a
Clover Jane.
Had them on our podcast too. Yeah. I'm noticing
it. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Yeah. Well, those are bands who work hard, right?
And you just said it. They've all been on the podcast. Now, how did that happen?
Not that Amanda Hardy, though. I won't have her. No. I'd have her on in a heartbeat, though. I think she's amazing.
She is so talented.
And she's got amazing things ahead of her. And then you also have the door Alive She Cried.
Alive She Cried.
It's a Doors tribute. And they're great, man. We're going to do this after hours. But yeah, to go back just like one more thing, I don't think that there is any other industry where there is a more common and misperception of how it happens.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, dude, all of those films, right? You know, well, so this guy walks into a club and he's got this suit and wow, I'm going to make her a star. And bam. And the next scene of the movie, he's on a tour bus and playing, you know, Key Arena.
Even right.
Dude, that doesn't happen. And especially these days, you know, all the old, behind the music, you know, and they're like, well, so we were out there playing clubs. We made a poster. We hung it up. You know, well, anyway, we got our deal with Warner Brothers Records. And we're on the road with, you know, the
we put our dong in a burrito and had sex with the same girl.
Dude, it's like, wow, man, you skipped a major part of your chapter, bro. Yeah. What happened in between there? You know, and I was sitting there watching those when I was a kid going, okay, how did you get the deal with Warner? What do you mean? Right. You know, well, we were playing the clubs. Well, that's neat, but, you know, so many people these days, you know, the industry dropped 64% between... between 1999 and 2009, 64%. And so they had to cut everybody. There's no more scouts out there. There isn't guys looking, you know, on the streets going to clubs. Hey, who's the big band? Let's go check them out like it used to be.
It's funny you say all this because it's like it's very parallel to the radio world. Because a lot of people, same thing, like bands, I'll just get a bunch of guys together. We'll get all these great shows. Same, I mean, we could all attest to this, like how many times you run into somebody and like, oh, you work in radio. Yeah, I think one day when I'm not working, I might just get that as a job too. Like, you know, I like to talk.
That's how it happens.
It's that easy.
That
people
seems
like
fun.
Listening.
Let's do that.
There's no grind. There's no working overnight. There's no that. And it's the same thing, like, you know, the days of having giant staffs, you know, weekend talent. It's all gone. It's like, but you have to make the adjustments and
you have to figure it out. Yeah.
And dude, you guys have.
We were kids, there were literally like 8 levels to Save the Princess, right? We're on level number 26 right now, wondering where the hell she is.
Nice. Yeah, and I can't stop for dinner because it won't let me save here.
Right?
Did you hear the story just recently of somebody who put, Rev, you probably know because it's Geek Nation stuff.
Yeah.
Somebody put a video game on pause because they didn't want to turn it off. And it was like,
oh, yeah.
And they had it on pause for like 20 years or something like that.
Yeah, it was a game that wouldn't save, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was, they had it for like their Nintendo or their Sega, and it didn't have a pause feature, didn't have a save feature.
It actually paused that long.
Yeah, and you just kept it, and it was, I mean, it was one of the old school, it was like a Genesis or something that was actually kind of built like a brick. You didn't have to worry about it like going away.
Wow, yeah, man, that says a lot about that manufacturer, doesn't it?
Yeah. That says a lot about that guy.
Turns out it was Metroid, and at the end he takes the helmet off, and you're like, what is that? Is it male? Is it female? There's red hair. What am I looking at? There's only like 10% of the world that gets that joke. But I remember beating Metroid. I would go to the mall and buy the book, and I sat with the book, and I conquered Metroid, and at the end, the little guy takes his helmet off, and I'm like, well, what? I can't even tell what I'm looking at, man. Is that one of those things from Aliens? What is that? Sorry.
It was a Super Nintendo.
It was?
Yeah.
You know what else is amazing?
I found it right on.
How did that house not go out of power once?
Well, imagine his wife cleaning and he's like, stay away from that thing.
Do not plug it in that outlet.
Yeah, they will not find your body if you unplug that.
I'd be freaking out if it was like a rainstorm or like anything. People are losing power. Get the generator. The game is on pause. Like, and at what point, maybe you have, like, you know, finishing issues. Finish the damn game.
Finishing issues.
Yeah.
Not only is it a porn joke, it's a great band name.
Let's do one more song before we roll out of here. Your guys' choice.
Pick one, man. Bro.
Do we want a rocker or a ballad? I think a rocker.
Oh,
yeah.
Toppy wants a rock. Toppy wants a rock.
Toppy, man, look at the back of the pew choose, bro.
Oh, this will be good. Watch he picks
I've been getting out of trouble this way for years. How about Toppy, man? What do you think?
Does I never minded?
I never minded. Yes, it rocks.
Sure.
Go for
rock.
It.
Rock.
That would be great. He's like, oh, let's hear Lady Jessica.
I saw that first, and I'm like,
I thought he was going to go with that because it's a girl's name.
That's the name of the thing in Metroid when it takes his helmet off.
Yeah. Come along, come along. It's a hell of a ride.
Nice.
Well, come along, good pick, come Toppy. Along, take a look what's inside. Come along, we can move, we can cut, we can bleed. Well, come along, we can hide, we can smother our bleed. Well, I know she knows.
During the beautiful ballad.
Right.
And then we put on the rock song and we just shut up.
Right, we're all just jamming.
We're all just wanting to rock out, man.
That's what happens when you get balls in your face. You can't talk.
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, man.
Yikes. Yeah.
Wow. We're trying to confirm now whether or not this is the Les Paul that Stone played on Even Flow, by the way.
I believe that is the drumstick that Dave Curzon used.
Well, I've got a text from Stone. No.
Pick of destiny.
For those that aren't able to go to the show to buy the record, where can they get it? I mean, obviously iTunes.
You can go to windowpane.net.
Okay.
And you can order a CD. Yeah. iTunes, it'll be up on there soon. You can also see the film. There's no such thing as the record label fairy. The full Windowpane documentary. It's an hour and a half feature. And it goes from everything from us starting out in the basement all the way to touring with Five Finger Death Punch all over North America. Everything. It's all in there. It's as much of an honest story as we could possibly tell about what it's like to walk this path.
I think any band new, like a local band coming up, should watch it, because I think it's like no different than hearing what you guys said earlier. I think there were a lot of great words of wisdom, and there's inspiring words, but there's also real talk.
Thank you. Yeah, we wanted to be completely straightforward. We're not trying to look cool in that thing. We're going, dude, this is this is it.
Well,
this is what
Mark looks
like.
Cool all the time.
Well, of course. Man, that ain't cool. Yeah, it's usually that if you watch it. Sort of, man, that's not cool. My sister called me. She's like, I watched your movie. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. She was like, you know, even if I didn't know you, it was so compelling, so well done. I'm like, yeah, Tony did a fantastic job. And she's like, Glenn, it's so tragic.
Yeah.
And you got to realize that we're discussing the story of my life. Yeah. And I'm like, well, thanks, sis. Yeah, that's kind of what happened. And she's like, yeah, it's just so tragic. I'm like, well, I'm going to go drink now. But listen, I'll call tomorrow. Tell Mom and Dad.
If I call in a few hours, don't answer.
I love
I'm
you,
drunk,
buddy.
And I'm angry. Hey, once again, congratulations. Great record.
Thank you. Thanks for having us up today, man.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. I hope for anyone who is in the band, this is probably rather informational. And hopefully a good kick in the ass for anybody out there that wants to get their music heard.
I had a great talk with one of the cats from Jesus Wears Armani. They're an awesome band. And he literally had said, dude, we watched your documentary as a band and went, oh, okay. These are the things we need to change about what we're doing. And I was like, oh, dude, really? And then we power drank and had a great time. But yeah, I mean, that was huge. I called Tony right away. I'm like, you're not going to believe this, man. I'm kicking with the Jesus Wears Armani. And this is what they just told me. Like, they watched it and went, oh, man, you know what? We need to address this, 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 and this. And it really made them look at how they were approaching their career. And that was really flattering. Love you guys, by the way, Rich. Love you, buddy. Really, really flattering to know that they watched it and went, man, here's what we should do different. And
that's cool.
If we can give that to one person, which we did, that's amazing, man. That's amazing for us. So
very, very, very cool. And I think a lot of people are going to be very impressed by what you guys are putting out.
I hope so.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the great record. This Saturday, Showbox at the Market. I'll be there. I know a bunch of people from the station are going to be there. We're going to have a great time. We're going to celebrate your music. All of us investors, we expect a couple dollars when we leave.
You got it. You got it. Yeah. If you see me crying out in front of the venue, it means that we did. didn't come out in the black.
That's right.
We will sign your package. Duh.
Appreciate that.
I do want to throw out, we have some cool surprises planned for during the set, too. Some musical surprises that that we're looking forward to deploying on the crowd.
Any hints?
No, but you're definitely going to go, no. And then a second later, you're like, oh, wow, they're really going to do this. Yeah, well, we had to buy an auto. We couldn't afford to buy an auto tuner, so we can't do any Kanye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was going to just go, this is my song, but I didn't think people would buy it.
Oh, man, I'm
I would. Hey, you got two right here.
Yeah. Bonus track that bitch.
Well, thank you, guys. Congratulations. We'll see you on Saturday.
I love you guys.
I'm very proud of what you guys put out. I think, man, I'm very, very proud of you guys for this record.
You guys, you helped make it happen. Yeah. The station helped make it happen.
I know.
Thank you, guys.
By me saying I'm proud of you, I'm really proud of myself.
Thank yourself, man. Thank yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Appreciate that. All right. Let's get out of here. Josh, my man in the back, putting baby in the corner. We appreciate you coming in. Thank you for listening to the Mixcast. Did you want to say hi to anybody real quick?
I just say thank you for having me in this morning and now, and it's awesome.
And you got a copy of the Windowpane record.
Sure did.
I saw you banging your head in the corner.
That's awesome.
That's nice.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, very, very cool. Well, thank you. And let's roll out of here, Top Shelf.
All right, the whole way?
We're out of here.
Oh, man. Whoa.
Big thanks to Charlotte from the WWE for joining us this week as
well.
Hell
yeah.
That's right. We only bring in the pretty people when we have a podcast. We got Juan and Tony and Charlotte.
That's not true.
You keep doing that thing with your lips? Yeah. Next week on the Mixcast, we've got Brent Smith from Shinedown. He's going to be joining us. They're going to be at the Paramount Theater on March 2nd. They got a new record, Threat to Survival. That should be a lot of fun. So for you Shinedown fans out there, Brent Smith from Shinedown, frontman, he'll be with us. That should be a lot of fun. All right. For Top Shelf, Rev, Mono Nick, Josh, Tony, Glenn, and the other guys, Mark, Sean. They're not here, but I feel like we got to give them props. The other guys.
Poor guys had to work.
The rhythm section.
That's not true. They're hungover and sleeping, man.
They're in a hot tub limo with a bunch of chicks, just like all the behind the music.
We're on the wrong end of this. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Mixcast. Stay positive.
Much love.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.